Geek Actually is brought to you by listeners just like you. Thanks for your donations. If you want to get involved, send an email to feedback@geekactually.com or use the contact form on the website. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Geek Actually, episode 36 for the 15th of May, 2009. And before we start anything or any introductions or anything at all, I have to say I'm very, 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 very sorry about last week and no show going up. If you follow me on Twitter or on Facebook, or if you go to the website, geekactually.com, you'll see that I've actually had a dreadful cold, which I still have, and I'm sure Jacob gave it to me because he had it the week before.
Bullshit.
Anyway, my name is David McVeigh, and I am your head geek here, and I'm joined in studio by Mr. Jacob Oberman, geek in training. How are you?
I'm good.
Hey, we really geeked out this week because the film we're reviewing later on in the show is going to be Star Trek. So, and Jacob even liked it.
What do you mean Jacob even liked it? I'm a big Star Trek fan anyway. It really was very impressive.
It is good. Well, more on that a little bit later on. First of all, I thought we'd just go through a couple of little tidbits for us. First of all, as I say, apologies for last week. Secondly, I was going to do listener feedback, but we didn't have any feedback.
For what?
2 weeks. We haven't had any feedback to
this
show.
Come on, guys, where are you?
So we can't read your wonderful comments and letters on air. So if you want your feedback read on air, we need to get your feedback in. So we don't even have anything. We don't even have a voicemail from Benjamin Straw this week, which I'm a bit disappointed about, but that's all right. I haven't been in touch with him either. So to be fair, I have been on a sick bed for the last week. So anyway, I thought we'd start this show, we'll kick this show off, because Jacob and I have seen an awful lot of films and stuff this week.
We have seen a shit
ton. Over the last 2 weeks, actually, going, even while I was sick, I still had to go to screenings. Now, some of them we're not going to review yet, because they actually haven't got release dates, or the release dates are further down the track, but we have actually seen a few. But Jacob did go see an Australian film, which I was about to say a new Australian film, but it's actually a very old Australian film.
Well, it's 40 years old.
40 years old, but it has been rediscovered and remastered and has been re-released. So, Jake, do you want to tell us
it's
a little bit about
that? It's an incredible Australian cinematic classic. It's called Wake in Fright. And as a natural fact, the original print was lost. And they found three prints that were destined for destruction at CBS in the States, believe
Except
it or not.
Except it had a different name. That's why they didn't know what it was.
Outback.
That's why it was called Outback.
Yep.
That's right.
So this was actually entered into competition in Cannes back in 1971 when it came out. And it stars Donald Pleasence, Gary Bond, Chips Rafferty in his last film ever, and a very young Jack Thompson. And it tells the story of a young Bond teacher, John Grant, who works in a small town in the Outback. It's set in an era before plane travel, and John's making his way to Sydney for the holidays. He stops overnight in Bundayabba. Drawn into the Yabba's culture of drinking and gambling, he becomes embroiled in the locals' insular and threatening world. And what it is a document that depicts the Australian character right down to the core, this gambling, drinking. In fact, its concept of mateship is actually it's not mateship. It's actually, well, it depicts mateship as harmful, very, very harmful.
Yeah, it's supposed to be quite a disturbing film.
It's extremely disturbing. It's very well, it has dated slightly, but it's a very well directed. Ted Kotcheff, of course.
I was about to say, the most remarkable thing about this film is that, and I actually really want to see this. I'm not, and Jake will, and we've made this plainly clear on the show many times, I'm not an enormous fan of Australian cinema.
No.
Because, you know, I feel that it has issues and so, but we, you know, you take it on a case-by-case basis. But this film is a piece of history, and I really did want to see it.
From an American director's perspective.
And the most amazing thing is it's directed by Ted Kotcheff. Now, for those who don't know, I mean, Ted Kotcheff has directed a lot of films, but probably one of the most famous of his films, and a lot of people don't even realize that it is one of his films, was he directed the very first Rambo film, The First Blood. Now, before we go, oh, God, for, you know, Rambo. First Blood in 1980 or 81 or whatever it was, is a remarkable film, and it was a film that set the benchmark for action films to come. I mean, films like Die Hard, Lethal Weapon, etc., would not exist without something like First Blood there in the first place.
Yep.
And so this is coming from this director who is an interesting director. He also directed, didn't you, Bob, Ted, Carol and Alice or whatever?
No.
Well, wasn't that one of his films as well?
No. I know what you know. It's fun with Dick and Jane.
Fun with Dick and Jane. That's right. The original Siegel and Fonda.
Yep.
Fun with Dick and Jane, which is also a great film.
Yep.
Really, really enjoyed it. I've just had an error come up on my screen. We're trying something new here, by the way. We've got a Windows machine patched into the soundboard for video clips, and I had some clips lined up, and it looks like Flash Player has just crashed.
Is that Windows 7?
No, this is XP. Unfortunately, I've got Windows 7 dual boot onto this machine, but I can't run the soundboard on Windows 7. Anyway,
this is showing at Cannes right now. It's actually the remastered version is showing back at Cannes. Actually, when it aired here, when it screened here for the first time in Australia, it was considered too confronting and shocking for Australian audiences. So it didn't actually do that well at the box office. But it's been an absolute classic.
It looks like I've just found a clip from it here on YouTube.
Oh, yeah?
Let's have a listen and see if this is actually a clip from it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing here.
Hi, thanks a lot.
Come and have a drink, mate.
No, thanks.
Come and have a drink.
No, I'm just not
drinking. Only take a minute. Come on, come and have a drink.
Look, mate, I've given up drinking for a while.
What's wrong with you, bastard? Why don't you come and drink with me? I just brought you 50 miles and eat and dust and you won't drink with me.
Look,
what's wrong with you?
What's the matter with you people, huh? You sponge on your ear. Burn your house down, murder your wife, rape your child, that's all right. Don't have a drink with you, not have a flaming bloody drink with you. That's a criminal offence. That's the end of the bloody world.
You're mad, you bastard.
That is so Australian, isn't it?
It's incredible. It's incredible. At a time when, particularly outback Australia, which is still the case to a great degree, were just a population of alcoholics, and if you won't have a drink with them, you're considered gay, a poor for you.
But the funny thing is,
because you're not validating their alcoholism.
But the funny thing is that that kind of mentality, that whole "have a drink, you bastard" sort of thing, is so prevalent today.
Yeah,
you know, it's still it's
this is still relevant to today. It's a frightening film, frightening.
I will have to go see this. It's opening in limited release soon. Do you have
on DVD?
You have a release date there, don't you? It's getting a small cinema run, and then it's going straight to DVD.
Late June.
Yeah, late June it's getting a limited release in art house cinemas, and then it's going to DVD. I can't wait to this. I was invited to this screening.
Yes. Donald Pleasance is hilarious, and his Australian accent is just spot on. He plays an alcoholic doctor who's in the outback who actually doesn't earn money. He gives doctoring services for barter, normally alcohol.
Fantastic. We actually went to see the screening of one of the films we're reviewing today, of course, which is a film called Gomorrah.
Mm.
And when we were going in, the woman at the review screening said, we also have this screening at 3 o'clock. And unfortunately, I couldn't make it. I had other things to do. But Jacob went for us, and he went to see it. And my God, he just has raved about it. So I can't wait to see it.
I was wrecked.
Well, yeah, especially after Gomorrah, let me tell you.
That too.
More on that a little bit later on, let me tell you. All right, so... I've got all sorts of things lined up here. I just don't know if it's all going to work off this Windows machine.
Can I just give an addendum to that? Wakeinfright.com. Wakeinfright.com. Go and have a look.
Great. Go have a look. We'll actually put that link in the show notes as
Please.
Well. Let me just write that down. Wakeinfright.com. All right. So now, as far as me, other than all the millions of screenings that we've seen, I've also been watching a bit of television over the last 2 weeks because I've been sick. It's easy to lay in bed. First of all, we've been watching American Idol. If anybody's been watching American Idol, it's a lot of fun. We won't go into that. That's not real geek. But I have been watching a lot of Star Trek movies, funnily enough. Little Geek got very excited about the new Star Trek movie and decided that he wanted to see some of the older Star Trek movies, much to the joy of my heart. Because he has never really expressed much interest in seeing Star Trek. He thought it looked kind of boring. But we've watched a few.
He's kind of right.
Well, you know what? Now that he started watching them, though, he's actually enjoying them. He doesn't enjoy classic Star Trek,
no.
Which I can kind of understand for his age group and everything else. He just finds, by today's standards, it moves really slowly.
Very slowly.
But the Star Trek movies, we started with Star Trek 2. I actually skipped him, Star Trek 1.
Which I sat in on.
Which Star Trek 2 you sat in on, that's right. Star Trek 1 we
with
skipped.
Ricardo Montalban.
I spit my last breath of D. Anyway, which I thoroughly enjoyed. You know, it's funny. We look at 80s films now, and I think the one that I really want to bring up is the one I watched last night, which Jacob also sat in on, which was we watched for the first time for me probably in 20 years, and for Jake, was saying 30 years possibly, was the original Porky's. And it was it was very interesting watching Porky's because one of the comments that you made, Jacob, was that it's kind of slow moving.
Very slow moving.
What's
enjoyable. Enjoyable.
Enjoyable, I mean, and the characters are a lot of fun.
It just sags in a lot of places.
But what's interesting is that back in 1981, when it came out, nobody would have made that comment because films were a different pace. And it's really, and this is also evident in the Star Trek movies. You look at Star Trek II. Star Trek II, when we saw it at the cinema, was this action-packed Star Trek, you know, fighting with Khan and, you know, all this sort of stuff. And yet when you watch it now, the action scenes are actually very far and few between.
Sure.
And there's a lot of, you know, the usual Star Trek talking in between and so forth. And as you go through, if you look at Star Trek First Contact, which was one of the Next Generation crew movies, that is much more in line with a modern day action film. It has, you know, more action in it, and it kind of moves along at a brisker pace.
David, the human film watching population are like a frog in simmering water. And the analogy I'm making there is that at the time, that was the pace of the world. The pace of the world and people's attention spans have now sped up exponentially.
It's pre-MTV.
It is. It's pre-MTV.
Yeah.
So, you know, back then if things were slower and more considered. Now it's bang, 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 bang. And if it's not that, well, then you've lost them.
But even people of our generation who used to watch those movies and go, that's perfectly acceptable, now we look at them and we go, oh, that's actually a bit slow, isn't
it? If there's any Generation Y people out there, I implore you to take out Porky's. Kim Cattrall from Sex and the City, she's playing the head cheerleader.
Lassie,
yes. And she's hot, by the way. And you can already see the sophisticated Mae Westian-style tongue-in-cheek aspect of her.
Absolutely, which would then lead into the original Police Academy, which, once again, in its day, was quite possibly one of the funniest films I'd ever seen.
Oh, easily.
And now...
With Michael Winslow.
Michael Winslow, Steve Guttenberg, and now you look at it and you go, oh, it's actually kind of dumb. But back then, that was funny shit, you know?
Which was also in conjunction with the proliferation of VHS and beta. I mean, with VCRs.
We were seeing the beginning of the home entertainment market by this stage.
Yeah,
it was
Stripes was the first VHS cassette I ever watched.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's not true. The first from a video library that I'd taken out was Stripes.
You know what? It's funny. I can't even remember the first VHS movie I ever hired. Wow, I have to think about that. I will ponder that, and I will get back
to this. Sorry.
Anyway, so I just thought it was interesting that we have got Little Geek on the Star Trek movies, and I think he's actually still going. I think when we sit down for our Friday night movie night, we'll probably be right back into Star Trek again tonight.
He's going to gazump you, you know, as the years go by. You know, you are filling him with all of this, and he's just going to gazump you.
I hope so. You know what? Let me just say something. Yeah. I used to be a teacher. For those who know me, you'll know that I used to teach information technology to international students. And the one thing that I was taught very early on with being a teacher was that your students should surpass you.
Of course.
If they don't come out knowing more than you know,
absolutely,
then you failed. Yep. So if Little Geek comes out being the geek, supreme geek of all geeks and knows everything about movies, I will be very, very pleased. Mm. Okay, I've got a little bit of tech news we're going to roll into here. I thought this was actually kind of a non-event story, but I thought I'd just bring it up for the sake of statistics. There's an article on sydneymorningherald.com.au on May 13th. That actually talked about software piracy. And the reason why I bring this up is because it actually leads into my second story, which is actually a better story. But basically they're saying that at the moment in the world, 41% of all PC software installed is considered to be pirate.
What's the percentage?
41%.
Bloody hell.
It's estimated to be losing software
companies.
That's
the official
That's the official numbers.
It's probably more like 60%.
But what's interesting is they actually go further down this article and they talk about what they consider to be piracy, and this is where we get into that ugly area.
Because the ugly area.
Because they actually sit there and talk about the fact that it's costing the software company U.S. dollars, $53 billion a year in piracy, blah, blah, blah. Worldwide piracy rates rose from 38% last year to the 41% in 2008. 38% in 2007 to 41% in 2008, despite the successes of fighting piracy in China and Russia, and it goes on, you know, blow our own horn, blah, blah, blah. They do go on to say that Australia was actually the good people here because apparently our software piracy dropped. It was 28% last year, 26% this year. So it actually dropped by 2 points. So Australians are starting to be a little bit better about what they're doing. But here's the part that got me. It says here that Robert Holliman, who is the president and CEO of the Business Software Alliance, said that Holliman said much of the losses came from small businesses that used unlicensed copies of popular software programs. They might have 50 PCs, but only pay for the rights to run the software on 25 of those machines.
Yep.
And it says here that the U.S. had the highest single dollar loss. Now, that statement is where we get into the ugly area, because this is a problem with software at this point. And this is something that Apple has gone... With PC software, because this is something that Apple combats. Look, the reason why... Let's take Windows as an example. The reason why a company who has 50 machines and then only buys 25 copies of Windows and then installs it across all the other machines is because each one of those copies of Windows is costing them in the realms of anything between $200 and $400 a copy, depending on which flavor of Windows they have.
Yes. Which they can only license to how many machines?
One.
Yep. And in Mac?
And in
five.
Mac, you go out and you buy yourself business licenses or family licenses or what have you. You can actually set them up onto five machines the board.
Yep.
Why aren't we seeing more group licenses where we can say, okay, look, you want to outfit 50 machines, we'll give you Windows for $50 a copy, you know, or something like that, because we know we're going to get 50 machines out of that.
Because this is the way they sell it to their shareholders, and they're staying steadfast in the old world until they are dragged, kicking and screaming, into the situation where they're going to have
multiple licenses. So I say the only people that the software, and look, really, really desirable software is heavily pirated. Adobe Photoshop is probably one of the most pirated pieces of software on the market. One of the reasons for that is because a copy of Photoshop is going to cost you $800 to buy.
Yep.
Now, most people don't have $800 in their pocket, but they really want to play with the software.
Yep.
Now, if you consider how many pirate copies of Photoshop are out there, if you were to sell Photoshop for, let's say, $200, you would sell 50 times more copies to all those people who pirated it because they suddenly got
at least you're getting some cash from them.
Well, because it's suddenly going, $200 isn't that much. No. And this is $200 that you wouldn't have had.
And they're building a relationship with that person officially.
Absolutely. Yep. The reason why the software is being pirated, this is across the board, whether it be Adobe or Microsoft or anything, is it's too expensive. Bring down the cost, you will sell more units, and more people will actually buy it if it is cheaper.
I agree. I wonder what the percentage is of people who pirate Adobe Photoshop. You know, how many business people actually pirate, and how many you know private pirate.
Well, that was actually a huge crackdown. I remember a study in Melbourne, Australia, here going back a few years. It was about 5 years ago. They did a huge survey across design businesses, and most of the graphic design businesses across Melbourne were using pirate copies of the Adobe software.
Is that right?
Because they couldn't afford the licenses across all their machines to use the industry standard software.
Yep.
So, ridiculous stuff. But this leads me into the next story, which this was actually last week, but because we didn't do a show last week, it segues beautifully in with that little study, which is in Sweden, we all know that Pirate Bay recently lost its court case, and the guys did go to jail. But they are appealing. But that actually gave fuel to a new political party that has actually been kicking around for a while, apparently, but couldn't really get a foothold. But it was actually founded in 2006, but they've now got a foothold, and it looks like they may actually win a seat in Swedish Parliament, and the party is called the Pirate Party. Now, it's not as silly as it sounds. These guys actually said that the Pirate Party, which wants to reform the copyright law, could ride the wave of discontent over the tighter control of computer file sharing.
No, Dave. Could ride the wave.
Ride the waves. It says here, the part that I like says that they actually For the party, they want to deregulate copyright, abolish the patent system, and decrease the level of surveillance of the internet. That is their policy. And it said, we are seeing... They quote,
but if you abolish the patent system, how on earth are you going to make money from...
Well, actually, I don't think they... Personally, I don't think they should abolish the patent system, but I think what we need to do is go back to the old system, which patents only last a certain period of time, and then things go out into the public arena.
Yeah, right.
But the problem is, companies like Walt Disney, who are the major factors here, keep pushing copyright law further and further and further. Mickey Mouse should have been in the public domain 25 years ago.
Ah, yes, this we know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, originally, it was a 50-year clause, and they pushed it out to 70 years.
75, yeah, and now they've pushed it out, now they pushed it out again.
Have they?
Yeah.
Have they?
Yeah. So they keep applying, and they keep winning, and so Mickey Mouse never goes into the public domain. Now, the whole reason for the public domain was to open things up after a period of time, right?
Yep.
So I can understand why, I mean, the knee-jerk reaction is abolish the patent system. I don't think they really want to abolish it.
No.
But if you put it forward like that, if you aim for the stars, you might fall somewhere a little bit lower.
Yep.
So I think that this is actually very interesting, and I'd like to see more about this. Well, the thing I really like was a quote that was given by one of the Pirate Party leaders who said, we are seeing a shockwave of new representative legislation that is seriously jeopardizing the core of our civil liberties. And people are starting to wake up to that fact. Mm. And I love that. It's true. We are starting to wake up to the fact that, hey, what happened to all of our rights, you know? And so they are fighting for us, the little guy. I don't know. It may go the same way as, like, you know, the marijuana party. Who knows? Now, I think this is the last piece of tech I have, and then we're going to move into film because we've got a few bits of film, and then we're going to get out of our reviews. Microsoft, a few years ago, if you remember, many years ago now, actually, had its antitrust case. And there was a comment that was made to me when I was actually teaching back in 2001, where they said, why isn't Google, and this is when Google was first growing into the juggernaut that it is today, they're saying, why is it that Google seems to be able to get away with taking over the world and nobody says a word, and yet Microsoft is continually perceived as the devil?
Good question.
Well, it would seem that Google is finally getting its turn because they are actually facing an antitrust case. In fact, by two government bodies. The first one is from the U.S. Federal Trade Commission. The reason for this is because they are investigating if Apple and Google have violated an antitrust case because two members of the board of directors of Google also sit on the board of Apple. So they're actually now investigating this, saying,
uh-oh,
we're not sure if this is actually quite legal. Mm. So they're investigating that. And at the same time, the U.S. Department of Justice has turned around, and they're looking at Google because of the whole e-book situation. You know that Google's trying to scan all books into the internet to have virtual libraries and stuff like that. Well, there's a controversial part of the deal that Google has signed with authors and publishers. It says that the deal gives Google the rights to digitize and sell sell access to so-called orphan works. Now, the orphan works has been a big issue for a while. These are products where they can't find the copyright holder. Now, in this, there is actually a law in America that says that if there's something that's an orphan, you can apply for it to be an orphan, and if somebody does come forward, then it's there, but otherwise...
Someone hands in... a bike to a police station after 3 months, you can come and collect it if no one
collects
it. Or cash. For
basically.
Yep.
So now, apparently they are settling this one. It's still being investigated, but they are settling it. But some people are now saying, is Google becoming potentially the next Microsoft in the fact that people are now starting to pay attention
Two words. Street View.
Well, and Street View is another
one.
Street
View is not legal in Greece. They drove the cars around and set it up, and the Greek court said, you're not allowed to do that here.
And what's interesting is that they just fought a battle on this in England for Street View, and they were actually found in the right. So the laws change in every country, so they're going to have to be very careful. Jake just brought this to my attention. I actually had the sheet in front of me already, but Jake just found it as well. Veteran Australian actor Charles Budd Tingwell has died. We both knew him personally. He will be a loss. He died due to complications to prostate cancer, which he has been fighting for some time. He was 86 years old. For those who are big movie buffs, you would remember him from such films as Break 'em Rant, miniseries All the River Runs Through It, and most recently, The Castle.
He should be remembered for his American TV series that he was in.
Yes, he was in...
Where he played the Doctor.
Which is
in the 50s.
I have gone blank.
1957. I know the year, but I can't think of the name of the show.
If somebody remembers, write into us.
Dr. Kildare.
Dr. Kildare. All right. So, so he will be missed. It's very sad. He actually got a a star on the budding Randwick Walk of Fame a year ago. So well, at least he got that before he died. He actually came down. I don't know how much prestige that actually holds. Okay, remakes, and sequels. Are you ready, Jacob? Hollywood has a... Look, before I start this, let's just examine this. Hollywood has a tendency of saying, I have an idea. And then as soon as somebody comes up with that idea, everybody else in Hollywood goes, hey, we've got the same idea, right? Let's recap. When the film The Abyss, James Cameron's The Abyss, was announced, suddenly we had Leviathan, Deep Star 6, and I think there was one more, which I can't remember off the top of my head. Yep. When the film...
We won't let you take all the cream.
No, when Robin Hood was announced. Yes. Three Robin Hood films were announced. One finally dropped away, but Kevin Costner's came out, and so did the other one with, what's his name, which was terrible and worth forgetting.
You're forgetting one more.
No, that's new.
Robin Hood Men in Tights?
I came later. That was parody. I'm talking about when they actually copy each other. When Deep Impact was being made, suddenly Armageddon followed in its footsteps.
Armageddon out of here.
1492 came out, and Dino De Laurentiis followed it with Chris Columbus. Yeah. Hollywood has this tendency of saying, well, if you're going to make it, so are we, damn it.
Yep.
Well, apparently it's happening again. Last week, it was announced that Keanu Reeves will be starring in Nicholas Winding Refn's Jekyll, which is a reworking of The Strange Case of Jekyll and Mr. Hyde for Universal Pictures. But where this came about was this week, apparently, another Jekyll and Hyde movie just showed up in the capable hands of the director Abel Ferrara, who directed The King of New York and Bad Lieutenant and many other B-movies, unfortunately. Yeah. He is moving on a contemporary reimagining of Robert Louis Stevenson's 1886 classic novella, and he's going to have it starring Forrest Whitaker and the rapper 50 Cent. I feel disaster written all over that. And at the same time...
Not necessarily.
Oh, come on. What are we going? Blackenstein? Blackula? Are we going back to blaxploitation?
No, not necessarily. But he might be remaking it in a modern context that it doesn't happen in London. It happens in...
I hate to tell you, but the Keanu Reeves ones is also a modern retelling. But apparently Guillermo del Toro has also got a Jekyll and Hyde film in the works. His is a more classic adaptation of the book. But as it is pointed out, Guillermo del Toro has so much on his plate at the moment, there is very little chance his will ever actually come to fruition.
Gotcha.
Now, Jacob, you and I were in Hoyts to see these screenings, and we noticed that Hoyts had an IMAX.
It appeared to me to be recent. I'd never seen it.
Well, so we went and asked her, and she said, no, because our first thought was, where?
Yep.
Where would you put an IMAX screen?
Yep.
Now, just for everybody's edification, an IMAX screen is generally 76 by 97 feet across. This is an enormous screen. Which is actually 23.
We are the wingspan of an airliner.
23 by 30 meters for those who are in the metric system. Yep. Okay. Well, we weren't crazy. We weren't crazy, you and I, because an article came out on Slash Film this week where I think it's actually, it might even be David Chen writing it. I'm not sure who actually wrote this, doesn't have his name on it, but they wrote an article about the fact that IMAX screens are turning up everywhere and how he was starting to feel ripped off.
Why?
Aha. So I think we were right. I think they are cheating us.
Yes.
According to his article, he actually says that IMAX is watering down its name brand by licensing out their name and quote-unquote technologies to a series of movie screens around the country. So this is in America, so I think the same thing's happening here by the sounds of it, around the country, which aren't anywhere near the size of traditional IMAX screens.
Oh, no.
In fact, the Empire IMAX, which is where he actually went to, is actually a screen of only 8.5 by 18 meters.
Rip off.
That's the size difference.
Rip off.
And they're charging $5 more to go to that.
Rip off.
Now, what's very interesting is he goes on to say that the way that the IMAX digital works is that they have two 2K resolution Christie projectors projecting two 2K images over each other to produce that wonderful crisp 3D digital IMAX.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
However, AMC cinemas in America, which are not IMAX, are all installing in across all of their theaters, installing 4K digital projectors. So he's saying, why would you pay more for the IMAX digital if you can get better quality going to a standard digital?
Standard digital, absolutely.
So I think IMAX is... going to be. They're pushing a boundary there that absolutely. I think they're pushing a friendship that I'm not sure if I'm happy about.
No.
So I would actually be very interested to know what the dimensions of the Hoyts Fox Entertainment Quarter cinema screen is.
Ring them.
And compare it to the IMAX in Darling Harbour, which is a proper IMAX.
Yep.
So it'd be very interesting to know what their dimensions are.
Do you know what you can do? And I've done this before. Speak to the projectionist.
That's a good idea.
You can actually just ask them, because they won't even ask questions, though, because they think it's going to be something technical. Can I speak to the projectionist, please? Hmm. Boom, they'll patch it
and
through.
I want ask you, them. Now, for those who don't know, Jacob is actually moving back to Melbourne tomorrow.
Yep.
So this is your last live show for a while.
You'll
be coming in via Skype. I said live show.
Yeah, okay.
Excuse my cough. I still have a bit of a cold. This will be your last live show. But the good news is that Miriam will be back next week in studio. She's coming up from Melbourne. Boy, everybody's traveling everywhere at the moment. Anyway, so Miriam will be on the show next week. Now,
howdy, Fred. Howdy,
what Ralph. What I want you to do when you're in Melbourne for me is to have a look around the VMAX, the Village Cinemas variation of IMAX, because apparently they've got something called VMAX.
What the hell's VMAX?
Well, this is what they're calling it. This is our friend David in Melbourne said he went to see Star Trek in VMAX. So I think you should go look into that.
Done. Okay.
You can look into that and report back to us. Right. Okay. Now, this is going to lead into our first film review. This is the last story. I take that back. We actually had another tech story.
What's some tech?
We got another tech story that I forgot to
You can't forget this, David.
Now, those who have been following the show know that we've been following the Microsoft-Apple ad campaigns, and we're going to start this by playing you the last Microsoft campaign. Now, this is the whole thing where, you know, the ads are, they send somebody out to buy a laptop for their needs. If you find it, they'll pay for it, okay? And this is Sheila. Now, pay attention to her criteria for her laptop in this.
All right. This is Sheila. She told us she wanted a laptop with
a fast processor, big screen, and I really need something that's going to be able to cut video.
For under $2,000, we told her, you find it, you keep it.
Let's go. I'm open to any brand. I'm a filmmaker, so I want something that's going to be powerful.
This is going to be a fast processor for video editing. That's going to help you a lot.
Let's keep looking. For under $2,000, this is the best Apple. It only has 2 gigabytes of RAM. Having it be portable is super important. FireWire, webcam, USB. Cool. This is an even bigger screen. If possible, want something a little smaller. Oh, look. Is this graphics card going to be powerful? Wow. The reason that this computer is perfect for me, it's got a widescreen, it is super fast, but it's also not too big. I would love to purchase this computer.
I'll be right back.
Yes. What? Awesome.
It's a wrap and a PC.
Hey, guess what I'm holding? My new laptop.
And again, Microsoft doth protest too much. The fact that they have to go out there to produce this scenario to say, look, people are really doing it. It's like, no, my friends. 2 gig of RAM on that. That's perfect for running Final Cut
now,
Pro.
What are you talking about?
I'm in the film. Anybody who fucking goes out, they're on Macs. Give me a break. Windows crash. It's a load of shit.
The point is this. The point is this. She had $2,000 to spend. She's actually holding in her hand the latest MacBook Pro, right, which actually has built-in software such as GarageBand and iMovie.
It's there
and
ready
all
to go. With her bloody PC, she would have to buy all the software.
Well, she's going to have to go out and buy video editing software
which
now.
It's going to be more than $1,000.
Right.
And she would have been $3,000. For $3,000, she could have the advanced MacBook
I have
Pro.
A MacBook Pro that is 2 years old, and I edit video quite happily on that machine.
Oh,
all right,
man.
So I just think that's the biggest misstep in the world. Anyway, the reason why...
They are desperate. Dumb.
Anyway,
dumb.
The reason why I played that was because Apple has fired back this week, and I only found out about these this morning, and I played them this morning, and they made me laugh. Here is their answer to that campaign.
Go.
Hello, I'm a Mac. And I'm a PC. You know, there are tons and tons of PCs out there, so I brought the whole range by to help find the one that's best for her.
A lot of PCs.
So what do you want?
Well, I want a computer with a big screen.
Okay, small screens, beat it. What else?
Well, I want it to have a fast processor.
Okay, slow PCs, go. What else?
I just need something that works without crashing or viruses or a ton of headaches.
Did you say no viruses or crashes or headaches?
Yeah.
Ugh. She's all yours, Mac.
Now, we actually started making a lot of noise there.
They've copped it up the clacker with a sandpaper glove.
We started making a lot of noise there at the end. I just want to play this last bit because the last bit is actually really, really
cute. Sorry, guys.
No, that's fine. It's really cute. Just listen to how Mac answers her, right?
Yeah.
Ugh,
She's all yours, Mac.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm a Mac.
I'm a Megan.
I'm a what?
I'm a Megan.
I'm a Megan.
All right, so, and for those who can't see it, of course, I would say go to apple.com and have a look at their ads.
Wait, guys,
you have to actually go to apple.com, yes. Not to your locally regioned Apple store, because those ads aren't necessarily available. They're not available in the Australian site, for instance, because they haven't aired here yet. But in if you go to the americanapple.com, you'll see them. They're on the front page. Now, for those who aren't seeing and you're just hearing it, what he's got is a whole line of business-suited people. Basically, they're the PCs, and as she's saying her stuff, they're all walking off. Anyway, this is another one to answer. They've gone on the attack. And here's the second one. This is Mac and his genius again.
Hello, I'm a Mac.
And I'm a PC.
And I'm a Mac genius.
Ah, the incredibly helpful Mac geniuses. Must be so great to have a real person you can go to when you need help.
What is that different for you?
Well, customer care representative.
Yeah, hi.
PC again. Okay, I'll try software then. Thanks. What I'm trying to explain is they told me to call you. Hello? Representative.
What do you mean you just sell computers?
Customer care! That's about the same.
No, it's about the same. And last but not least, they went on with this one, which I love, because this is PC running a radio show.
Hello, I'm a Mac.
PC Choice Chat.
PC Choice Chat.
Yes, a radio show that helps people pick the best PCs for them. Hey, let's go to the phones. Tom from Kalamazoo, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing? What PC do you recommend for people who hate getting viruses?
Oh, that's a good question.
Crank call. Let's go to Wendy from Fairfield. Hello.
What PC offers great customer support like Mac Genius?
No, not doing that one. Let's go to Greg from Dearborn, Michigan. You're on the air.
I'm a longtime PC user. Now I'm thinking about switching to Mac.
I love doing that.
All right, so that's Apple's answer to Microsoft's you buy it, you find it, we'll pay for it.
And it's genius.
It's genius. And look, Microsoft went out and they did these complicated ads, and they've gone out and they've followed these people around, they do all this nonsense, and then you know what? Apple comes back with these two guys in front of a white screen and just blow them out of the water in one hit. It is classic campaigning. So I'm very, very happy with those new ads. I think they are wonderful, and I'm glad that Jake could share those with us here live. All right, so let's get into film. And the first, we're going to lead into film with our last piece of film news, and then we're going to go, this will lead straight into our first review. Zachary Quinto, who actually plays Spock in the new Star Trek movie, who is wonderful, and we'll talk more about him during the review, said that the classic Vulcan signature, the two-finger, the four-finger spread V symbol that they do live long and prosper, he just couldn't do it.
Marvelous.
Apparently, he genetically could not get his fingers to move in that direction. And they worked on this, and they tried to figure it out. And in the end, they went for a very low-tech but logical solution, and that is, if you watch the film, you won't be able to tell, but you'll never see him actually go into the gesture. He always brings it in from off screen, and that's because his fingers are glued together.
With surgical glue,
which they could then remove. But apparently he's not the first.
Fascinating.
Apparently he's not the first actor who couldn't do this. Apparently William Shatner himself could not do that symbol either. And so in the original Star Trek, they used to tie his fingers together with fishing line.
Just a little bit of trivia here. If you watch, there's a documentary on YouTube with Leonard Nimoy about the origins of that symbol. The Vulcan symbol comes from the high priest of the Temple of Solomon, and of course Leonard Nimoy is Jewish, and he is aware of that symbol. The spreading of the fingers like that makes the Hebrew letter Shin, which is a three-pronged letter, and it's the first letter of one of God's holy names that are not mentioned. So it does have it's used with the blessing of the congregation, and so it's a blessing. It's a blessing.
Well, there you go. Yep. And in the world of Star Trek, it means live long and prosper.
That's it.
And that leads us into our review of Star Trek. Hello.
I couldn't believe it when the bartender told me who you are.
Why are you talking to me, man?
Your father was captain of a starship for 12 minutes. He saved 800 lives. Including yours. I dare you to do better. Enlist in Starfleet.
You
You will experience fear.
Fear in the face of certain death.
Pull your chute!
We received a distress call.
I've been waiting for this day my whole life. This day of reckoning.
We've got no captain and no first officer to replace him.
Yeah, we do.
You are capable of deciding your own destiny. The question is, which path will you choose?
James T. Kirk was a great man, but that was another life.
And that leads us into our review of Star Trek by J.J. Abrams, the new Star Trek movie that has just been released at cinemas. And let me tell you, there's an ad campaign in America at the moment on television where it comes up and says, this ain't your father's Star Trek. And that is absolutely true. Jacob, what did you think?
I think that this is the most accurate realization of Gene Roddenberry's Star Trek concept, more so than anything that has gone before it, even the TV series. It has this beautiful blend of drama and action, and its authenticity, the production design, everything is believable. The greatest thing about this realization, and let me tell you, when I first saw the original trailer, which didn't do it any justice whatsoever, I feared that it was just a backdrop that they were going to put this soapy drama in front of. Complete opposite.
Look, that's the clip you just heard. Yes. There is actually the second trailer.
Yes, yes.
And I actually just got goosebumps listening to
it.
Again.
The most important factors are this, and I'm sure you will agree with me. First of all, this has been portrayed to a brand new generation, Generation Y, and to do that, as you say yourself, they use the MacGuffin of bringing Spock back in time to indicate that this is actually a new timeline. It's a new beginning, and they can go from there.
We don't want to give away spoilers on the show, but that's not really a spoiler, because we do know that Leonard Nimoy does make a cameo.
We know.
I've talked
know.
About this
yes,
for a long
yes,
time.
Yes.
I will say that, not giving too much away, because I actually don't want to give away spoilers on this, because I want everyone to go see this.
Please go see this.
And it is...
Even non-Trekkie people,
absolutely.
This is the thing. It really is. It's totally accessible to everyone.
This is a brand new Star Trek, and J.J. Abrams is a genius for the way he's handled this. He's managed to put this MacGuffin in there where basically he has allowed himself to reset the timeline and basically say all rules are off, this is all new, and we can now do anything we want.
At the same time, as stylistically, he has drawn from the original TV series, and it's indicative in the soundtrack and the actual style and production design. It's there. It's honoring it. It's an honor. Mm.
It's magnificent. It is action-packed, but not for the action's sake. It drives the story forward. But the thing that I've got to say above all else, excuse me one more time, but the thing I've got to say above all else is that universally, across the board, I loved the cast of this film. I thought the cast was magnificent. And I got to tell you, when I saw the trailer and I saw Chris Pine, I actually thought, oh, God, why have they cast this pretty boy, Beverly Hills 90210-looking guy in the role of William Shatner or in the role of James T. Kirk? But I was so wrong. Chris Pine was charming. He has charisma just oozing out of his ears, and he's very funny in places.
Yep.
That scene early on in the film where McCoy is trying to cure the virus on him and he's following him around, that was funny stuff and beautiful timing.
But again, both Bones and Kirk, or the actors playing those two characters, and for that matter Spock and Uhura and Chekhov, are all honouring some facet of the original performances of the television actors. They have taken some of the mannerisms, but they're not mocking them. They're adding.
What we've seen in this film is they have been given the instructions that they need to be like the original characters, because as much as we are drawing in a new audience, we still have to also the original Trekkies are going to come to it and say you better be careful.
Yeah.
they have got, as you say, mannerisms and characteristics of those original characters. And then, on top of that, they've taken them and they've made them their own.
Yeah. So the now, young Chekhov, the 17-year-old Chekhov. Outstanding.
Yeah, he's very funny. You know, okay, his accent's probably a little bit caricature, but it works. It works. It's very funny.
I disagree. I don't think it is caricature. He really is Russian.
Is he? I didn't see. Yeah, I didn't realize he was Russian. Oh, well, there you go.
He really is Russian. No, no, no. He's not caricature.
I also have to say that I thought Carl Urban, who I actually really liked in the Lord of the Rings films as well.
What did he play in Lord of the
Rings? He was Yomer, the horseman, the son of the king. Was it the nephew of the king of the Riders of Rohan? But he...
You're such a geek.
Sorry?
You're such a geek.
I know. Yeah. But Carl Urban plays Bones McCoy in the new Star Trek, and he does a wonderful job of bringing across the character. And he walked a very fine line. Let me tell you, he walked a very fine line, because as soon as he says, "I'm a doctor, not an engineer," damn it, you know, you sit there and go, "Oh, you're this close to stepping over the line to being a cartoon character."
But he didn't do it.
But he didn't. And he pulled it off, and to the point where we go, okay, that's McCoy.
McCoy is a hypochondriac doctor.
Absolutely, and he pulled it off really well. I thought...
all of the diseases in space!
In fact, I've got a clip here for us. And the funny you should actually mention... Oh, hold on, where's my clip? I had a clip for us. I had a clip.
David has a Mac. He also has a PC. David has two Macs, actually.
Okay, I've got all sorts of computers here, but do you know what?
Ding, ding, ding.
No, do you
ding,
know what?
Ding,
that's ding. That's the clip that crashed. Okay, I actually had a clip which was from early in the film where McCoy first meets Kirk. But here's a scene for you. Hopefully this one will play. This is the world of PCs. What can I tell you? Here's a clip. This is where... Kirk first meets Uhura. Oh, yeah. If it plays. Are you going to play for me?
We apologize for this break in transmission and we'll resume normal programming just a moment.
No, you see, this what happened is that Flash Player crashed, and I think it's taken all the Flash content down with it. That's a shame.
Let's keep talking.
We'll keep talking. I will see if I can reboot this clip. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, though... it is well worth going to see. I have to recommend it to anybody.
This is the first film in a very long time, ladies and gentlemen and children, that I have felt as if the film was finished within half an hour. It felt like half an hour. It's a two-hour film. Mm. It felt like
it's actually
half
over
hour.
2 hours. And it flies.
It felt like a half hour. Incredible. Incredible.
No, it's a really, really good... I'm also going to say Eric Bana, Australia's Eric Bana, playing Nero, the head Romulan, does a really good job, because, you know, I'm not a huge Eric Bana fan, because I find that he disappears up his own fundamental orifice just a little bit too often. But, oh, here we go, the clip's playing.
Not in this case.
Here we go.
Yeah.
So, you're a cadet, you're studying, what's your focus?
Xenolinguistics. You have no idea what that means.
Study of alien languages, morphology, phonology, syntax... Means you've got a talented tongue.
I'm impressed. For a moment there, I thought you were just a dumb hick who only has sex with farm animals.
Well, not only.
This townie isn't bothering you, right?
Oh, beyond belief. But it's nothing I can't handle.
You could handle me. That's an invitation.
Hey, you better mind your manners.
Oh, relax, Cupcake. It was a joke.
Hey, farm boy. Maybe you can't count, but there are four of us and one of you.
So get some more guys, and then it'll be an even fight.
Yes, that is our introduction to Kirk, well, the adult Kirk, basically, because he is presented as the rebel without a cause. He is presented as a troubled youth who really doesn't have any idea, but he is a genius, and he is a natural leader, and he is tough as nails, and he's thrown into this situation where he's basically forced to make the decision to... become what he's supposed to be. And that's really what the film is about. But it's telling the parallel story of Spock, who is also a child of two worlds, being half human, half Vulcan, and he's trying to find his place in the world.
It's a film about destiny.
It is. It's about destiny. And it really is, really, on top of all else, just a lot of fun.
I felt so good coming out of this film.
Absolutely.
So
I've got a little piece of music for us, Jacob.
What's that?
I thought we might play a little bit of the new Star Trek music. This is from the new Star Trek movie. This is leading into the opening credits. It actually gives you a flavor of the new Star Trek, because gone is the sea shanty, Jerry Goldsmith-style films, and now we're into this is the new Star Trek. And there's a little bit of the new Star Trek score. Now, it's very interesting. I was listening to Slash Filmcast this morning. No, I take that back. It wasn't Slash Filmcast. They were actually really positive on this film. They loved it. Who was it where I was reading? Anyway, I was reading it. Oh, no, it was an iTunes review. Mm-hmm. That said, oh, I'm not so sure I like this new score because, you know, the thing I always equate with Star Trek is big, grand, you know, music, big, grand scores. And it's like,
excuse me?
What were you listening to?
As big, as grand as they come?
It's pretty grand. You know, I thought it was a fabulous score. Mm-hmm. I thought they did a really, really wonderful job.
Who was the composer?
Michael Giacchino. I probably massacred his last name. Giacchino. Mm-hmm. Let me see. I'll see if I can find it for you. Hold on. Yeah, here it is. Giacchino.
Michael Giacchino.
Yeah, he regularly scores for J.J. Abrams. He does the music for Lost on television. He did the score for Mission Impossible 3. And now J.J. Abrams Mission Impossible 3 was also a really wonderful film. I know Mirren hated it, but Mission Impossible 3 was a big return to form after Mission Impossible 2, which was a disaster.
Never been into Mission Impossible.
But as far as, you know, his work as a producer as well, let's not forget that this is the man who produced the series Alias, which was fabulous. Sure, he produced the series Lost, which is fabulous. Sure. He produces the series Fringe at the moment, which I haven't seen yet. And he also produced the smash hit from last year, Cloverfield. He doesn't stop, and he's really, really excelled. And here's the most staggering part of all of this. Star Trek, this new movie, is only his second feature film as a director.
Yeah, but he's had a lot of experience.
He's had a lot of television experience. Yeah. But that as a second feature film was staggering. Also, I have to point out, one thing that really got me about this film was the fact that ILM's visual effects are flawless.
Absolutely flawless.
Absolutely flawless.
No models.
No model work at all. And this is the thing that really got me, was that you normally do your hero shots or your big spaceship pass-bys and stuff like that using model work because you can get a really tight detail on it. They opted not to use models at all because of the dynamic camera work that J.J. Abrams wanted to do. They could move around a lot easier in 3D space, and you wouldn't know. The 3D model work is sensational.
I want to go and see it for a second time, but this time I want to sit downstairs. We happen to be parked upstairs, unfortunately.
I've seen it twice now.
Yeah, you have.
Yeah, I've seen it twice, and let me tell you, it's actually better on second viewing because you actually sit there and start watching little details. Mm. And I dare not talk about the little details because they are kind of spoilerish. Mm-hmm. But if you are a Star Trek fan, there are little, you got to listen carefully to the dialogue. There are a couple of pointed moments where they refer to other stuff in the Star Trek world. So they are, even though they've reset the timeline, they are still paying tribute to what has come before them.
Some of those mega buildings in the background in San Francisco.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. It's great stuff. Great stuff. Anyway, I think we can both highly recommend Star Trek. Little Geek will be on the show a little bit later on to tell you his opinion of it. Unfortunately, he's at school right now. But he will be on in the tail end of the show just to give us his opinions on Star Trek. He also loved it. So we'll wait to hear his. Second film that we have. Actually, before we do this, I actually played this clip. I played this clip in the last show as a tease in the Little Geek section. This is actually another clip from Star Trek. This is actually when Scotty first comes aboard the Enterprise.
Oh, yeah.
We have played this on the show before, but we'll play it again now, seeing as we are talking Star Trek. Here is Scotty first coming aboard the Enterprise.
Who are you?
I'm with him.
He's with me.
We are traveling at warp speed. How did you manage to beam aboard this ship?
You're the genius, you figure it out.
As acting captain of this vessel, I order you to answer the question.
Well, I'm not telling, acting captain. Well, now, that doesn't frustrate you, does it, my lack of cooperation? That doesn't make you angry.
Are you a member of Starfleet?
Yes. Can I get a towel, please?
Under penalty of court-martial, I order you to explain to me how you were able to beam aboard this ship while moving at warp.
Well, don't answer him.
You will answer me.
Anyway, that Scotty is played by Simon Pegg, and
wonderfully by Simon Pegg.
It's he once again walks a very fine line with caricature because of the Scottish accent and stuff, but he actually does it very well. Our second film that we're reviewing is the absolute polar opposite. Now, I have a trailer here to play for you, but I must warn you in advance.
Hang on a minute. Polar opposite to what? Star Trek?
Star Trek.
Well, it's not a polar
opposite. In tone and mood.
In tone and mood it is, but it's still a fantastic film.
But No, yeah, I'm not talking about whether we both loved this next film, but it is a really, really, really hard-hitting film. Now, I have a trailer here, but I must warn you that most of the trailer is actually in Italian. So our Italian listeners are going to have a great time because they're going to be able to understand it. But this is actually the American trailer. It's just, unfortunately, whenever the characters talk, it isn't in Italian. But I'll just play a little bit of it just to give you the flavor.
Hey, what was that? This?
In Naples, one of the oldest cities in Italy, there's a war raging in the streets. Because one organization, the Camorra, has corrupted all levels of society.
Noi arriviamo a risolvere problemi che hanno creato gli altri.
Lo sai quanto operai se sono salvato perché non faccio spendere un cazzo della loro azienda?
Tutta gente che si salva se la mente perché c'è sta mietta.
E non funziona così.
No?
No.
No?
Io non sono un buon mettere.
No. E come si?
No one is safe.
Io voglio un pozzo con Giovanni. Andiamo a morire apposta.
Così mi spiega!
No one is spared. And everyone from the youngest boy.
Okay, that's a little bit of the American trailer for the film Gomorra. Mm. Now, we went to see a screening of this last week. And it's actually being released in cinemas this coming Thursday here in Australia.
Correct.
So it will probably only be a limited release. I don't think it's going mainstream. It'll probably show at the art houses and
so forth. Beg your pardon? Was released yesterday.
Oh, it was yesterday.
Yep,
was it?
Yep.
Oh,
well, released yesterday. Released, national release was yesterday.
Oh, of course, because we didn't do a show last week. I'm thinking last week we were going to do this and we're going to say release next week. But no, we didn't do a show last week.
It was released yesterday.
We're a week later, aren't we?
Yep.
All right. This film tells, as the trailer said, tells the story of the Camorra, which is basically the, for lack of a better word, the Napolese mafia. And it's infiltration of basically everybody's lives in Napoli. And it is terrifying. This film is just... It is cinema verite done to its most brilliant, I think, in this absolutely true... gritty, real film about life.
I'll just quote you Matteo Garrone, who's the director. He says, the raw material I had to work with when shooting Gomorra was so visually powerful that I merely filmed it in as straightforward a way as possible, as if I were a passerby who happened to find themselves there by chance. I thought that this was the most effective way of reproducing the feelings I experienced during the time I spent making the film. Now, he actually shot in the areas that this is based on. He shot in the areas of Caserta and Scampia, which are suburbs of Naples, where this all happens.
It takes serious cojones, let me tell you.
Well, it takes big cojones because it's based on a book by Robert Saviano, and Robert Saviano is under police protection, has been since 2006, because of writing the book. Now, the difference is with the film... He's depicting fictional characters, so it seems like he's been left alone. Let me just read you something from Robert Saviano himself about some of the things that are depicted in the film but are also very prevalent. First of all, that the Camorra doesn't only earn money from illegal drug and arms trafficking and through protection rackets. It's also doing business in such sectors as construction, tourism, textiles, transport, fuel, distribution, food, supermarkets, restaurants, shops, cinemas and banking. And the immense earnings generated by these illegal activities are then reinvested in numerous legal activities that extend well beyond national borders, from Taiwan to Aberdeen. The Camorra has even bought shares in the reconstruction of the Twin Towers in New York City.
That part just blew me away.
So it's got people in every class, every social class, doctors, business people, chemists and engineers, and it focuses on these, but most importantly, it focuses on the children, the poor children who don't have a chance. All these kids want to do is live a normal life, and they're hooked in to becoming a drug couriers very early on in the piece.
Yeah, no, it's actually a very disturbing film in many ways, and I think I'll go so far as to say I don't think it's actually perfect. All right, now Jake and I disagree on this because I actually found it's a long film. It is 2 hours and what is it? 2 hours and 10, 2 hours 15 minutes, something like that.
Yep.
Now,
137 minutes.
There you go. I actually found that the first probably 45 minutes, actually when I first came out, first said first hour, but no, I think it's actually probably about the first 45 minutes. I found the first 45 minutes of the film a little messy. And that was just purely because of the way it's shot and being this real slice of life. I actually found that I was having trouble keeping track of who was who. But that being said, as the film goes on, you lock into the characters quite well.
See, I think that's perfect. I think he's done that quite deliberately to give this sense of, and this is how it is with the mafia and these people living under such tension, that they don't know who's friend and who's foe. And you start to get this idea via this methodology, this erraticness. It's quite deliberate.
You find as an audience, you actually find it hard to latch onto somebody to follow the stories through. Now, the only two that I actually thought right from the get-go, I went, oh, okay, so we're following these two. We're the two who thought they wanted to be Scarface, right?
Toto.
And I think
that's not Toto.
No, you're thinking of Marco and Cairo.
Yep.
Now, the reason why, according to the plot synopsis here, it says they think they're living in a Brian De Palma film. This film is, by the way,
presented by Martin Scorsese.
Yeah, he's obviously seen it and said, we've got to bring this to the rest of the world. Mm. And it is a great film. By the time you reach the closing credits of the film, you are shell-shocked. Mm. And it is amazing. Now, the reason why, and I said this to Jake last week when we were talking about the film, the reason why I think that the first part didn't work for me was because the director has purposely kept all the segments of the, because it actually follows, what is it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different stories running simultaneously. Yep. And each of the five stories aren't giving very much time each in the first 45 minutes. It's like we see a little bit of this one, move on to the next one, move on to the next one, move on to the next one. But by the second half of the film, he invests more time in each of those characters. Mm-hmm. And so that's why you start to follow them.
Yes.
So I think in the first half, it just, and I'm not even saying it's a fault with the film. For me, it moved along at a pace that I wasn't attaching myself to anyone. Mm. So I was looking at going, yeah, it's really horrible. It's gritty. It's this, but I couldn't get emotionally connected to any particular person.
Until the second half.
Mm. He wasn't giving me a chance.
Oh, I would agree with that. I felt on edge the first half of the film. Mm. Which I think is what he was trying to achieve.
One of the most amazing things about that was the fact that his device for putting us on edge was this opening sequence of the film, where something unpredictable happens in that opening scene of the film, and because of that, you are sitting on edge for the next hour wondering if that's going to happen again.
Yep.
And I think that's very clever of the filmmaker. Mm-hmm. I think he is a great filmmaker. I think he really knew his material.
Oh, he did.
He knew his characters. Look, by the second half of the film, you and I both, we were devastated by the tailor, the character of the tailor, and what happened to him. We were saddened by the character of Don Cairo, who was just, I mean, that was such a sad story.
Very, very, very sad.
The man really didn't do anything wrong. He was just doing his job, you know.
But the subtext under all of this is how entrenched they are in industry, and in particular fashion and all the sweatshops. So there's this scene where you see the tailor seeing his design that had been put together in this Chinese sweatshop in Italy on Scarlett Johansson at the Academy Awards.
But he doesn't get any credit for it.
He gets no credit, but there she is. She is actually wearing that dress. And it says here, as he quotes, in the fashion sector, the Camorra runs the production of fake designer clothes, but it's also involved in the manufacturing of some of the most prestigious Italian fashion design through an extensive network of illegal companies which depend on the clan for credit. You understand? They get their credit to design the real things, and they are also producing the fake things. The other thing that's pointed out in the film as well is about toxic waste dumping. It says, thanks to competitive prices, the Camorra has a monopoly on toxic waste dumping. And for over 30 years, many companies from northern and central Italy, with the help of mediators linked to companies that are owned by the Camorra, have buried their toxic waste in southern Italy, poisoning farmlands, contributing to the exponential growth of tumours amongst the population. And it says, if the illegal waste managed by the clans was accumulated, have a listen to this, it would create a 14,600-metre-high mountain with a base measuring 3 hectares, almost double the highest mountain in the world, Mount Everest, which is only 8,850 metres high.
And for those who are wondering where these stats are coming from, they actually come up in the end credits.
Yep.
They actually show, these supers come up at the end, that give you these facts, and you sit there and go, you're joking. Yep. It's like the sheer facts that come out of this film are just staggering. Now, I mean, some of it you can look at it and go, as an example, the two boys who I think they're living in a Brian De Palma film, their fate, and I won't give away spoilers, but their fate is predictable. Yeah. We can see from the first minute we meet them in the very first reel of the film, you sit there and go, you're coming to a grisly end. And you can just spot it. Yep. But
as we do in life.
As we do in life. And it's watching that journey get to that point. But, you know, there is a bleak realism to this film that is just staggering. And I've got to say, though, the photography is magnificent. There are shots in this where they pull back to outside of these apartment buildings or these apartment complexes, and the sheer scope and size.
It is Gomorrah. And this is the thing that Dave and I were questioning, because I thought sometimes there's a slightly different pronunciation to the word Gomorrah. But in fact, it is Gomorrah is the name of the film, as in Sodom and Gomorrah. Yeah. And Gomorrah, of course, is the name of the Neapolitan
And the reason for this is because all these events really take place in these enormous apartment complexes.
Yes. That are
housing commission complexes, which have just been basically hollowed out, and the dregs of society are living in them.
Can I just state this, this does take place in front of us on camera. Scampia, the suburb where it's shot, is in fact the largest open-air drug marketplace in the world, and its earnings from a single clan every day are €500,000 every day. Every day.
Scary stuff.
Yep.
This is a film that is not for the faint of heart.
No way.
It is not for those who...
Have you seen Peugeot by Hector Bebenko?
No, we actually talked about this. I actually have not seen Peugeot. I really want to. When I worked at a video...
Spelled P-I-X-O-T-E.
When I worked at a video library many, many, many years ago, we actually had it. And I kept thinking, I must watch that because everybody told me about it.
It's about the children on the streets in Brazil, in Rio de Janeiro. And of course, the director, Hector Bebenko, used real street kids, as has Matteo Garrone in the film Camorra.
And it's there's been a few comparisons to this, actually. I think it was the podcast Film Spotting, I think.
Did they make that comparison? It may have been compared
to Peugeot as well. Yeah. So, I think it's this film is going to be around for a while, and it's going to be remembered. I do recommend seeing it, but you've got to be in the right mood for this. We were quite shattered for the rest of the day, and I can't believe you went to see Wake and Fright after this.
I needed an antidote, but that wasn't it.
I actually went to see Star Trek the next day, and that was my antidote for it. Yeah. That's a good combo for you. Go see Gamora. The next day, go see Star Trek. You'll have a great time.
You will.
Because Star Trek will cure you of anything. Somebody actually said on the Slash Filmcast this morning, I was listening to it, they said that Star Trek is the perfect example of the summer movie, and this is why we go to summer event movies. Yeah, this is exactly what it's all about. And on that note, I think we're probably going to wrap this up.
Nice one.
I think we're going to bring in the little geek. I'm going to play for you a little piece of music to bridge us over. This is from the new Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
But funnily enough, I think you'll recognize it, because what they've done in the end credits of this movie is they have redone or modernized the original Star Trek theme. And it's beautifully done. It's beautifully done. So we're going to play a little bit of this, and this will lead us into the little geek. And in the meantime, I want to say thank you very much, Jacob, for joining me in the studio.
It is my distinct pleasure every single time.
Now, next week... Yep. I think we have more films to review, because we've seen a lot of films lately. Yep. Let me tell you.
Yep.
I think we have another couple of films that are coming up in the next week. So we will talk via Skype.
Done.
And Jacob will be coming in to us via Skype over his internment in Melbourne.
Yes.
And so here comes the little geek right after this.
Go, little geek.
That leads us into Little Geek. How are you, Nicholas?
Okay.
Just okay?
Yeah.
Oh, I just knocked my microphone stand.
Well, yesterday I was doing my nap plan.
Yeah, well, so explain to our listeners what the nap line actually is.
Oh, yeah, it's a test that year 3 and 5 have to do.
Right.
And it's like it tests your skills. Like there's one test that has like your skills on a narrative. There's another test that has your skills on maths.
And I can tell our listeners that you've been dreading this test.
Since year one. And I'm finished it.
And now you've finished it, so now you can relax a little bit. Huh? My microphone seems way far away from me. There, that's better. Excuse me. I was explaining to our listeners that I'm still fighting a bit of a cold.
Yeah. You've like got lots of sinuses.
Yeah.
I also got some sinuses too.
Yeah, you do. The whole house is actually a little bit of a house of sick at the moment. Now, we played that music as our introduction into this thing because...
And it wasn't the music I wanted.
No, I know. All right, look, just for the sake of Nicholas, the piece of music that he wanted, and we won't play the whole thing, but the piece of music that he actually wanted was, let me see here, it was this one. But unfortunately, the reason we didn't play that music was why, Nicholas, do you know?
Because you said that you were going to play the other music this afternoon.
Well, there's that, but there's also one other bigger reason. What's the bigger reason?
That's the main theme of the new movie.
That's right, because we're talking about the new movie and the new movie's theme.
Except it was made by the same person.
No, it wasn't.
Wasn't that music redone by the same person?
No, the original score was by Alexander Courage. Jerry Goldsmith did the second one you just heard. Jerry Goldsmith wrote the music for the movie, and that was the movie theme. And he brought that for the movie theme, and then that music was then used for Star Trek The Next Generation. It was actually brought back to the television show for The Next Generation. But the original series, which is where the new Star Trek is based on, that was Alexander Courage's theme. Now, that piece of music is actually not in the film until the very end. It's the end credits.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to start this by saying, straight off the bat, that this is a spoiler zone. Yeah?
Spoiler zone!
We're going to call this a spoiler zone. Jake and I have already done the review. We've already talked about it. We kept very...
Random spoilers.
We kept very spoiler-free. But for the next... Nicholas only joins us for about 10 minutes here. So for the next 10 minutes, we're going to be a spoiler zone. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean we're going to say spoilers, but sometimes things just come out of Nicholas's mouth that we have to be prepared for. So anyway... So, Nicholas, what did you think of Star Trek?
I thought it was... Excellent.
It was very good. What was it that you liked about it?
Well, I just like how they got like a whole new cast, and they're all perfect cast.
Yeah, well, that was one of the things we talked about in our review, was the fact that we thought that it was just the characters were just perfect in this.
Yeah, I think it was one of the best ones.
You think it was the best one, or one of the best?
One of the best ones.
What is your favorite Star Trek film? I explained to our listeners earlier in the show that you and I have been going through the old Star Trek films.
Yeah, now I have to watch all the Next Generation Star Trek.
That's true. So you've actually gone part 2 through to part 6. Skipping part 5 because part 5 was crap.
And part 1.
Well, and part 1, yeah. I explained why we didn't do part 1 because it's kind of dull. So you've done 2, 3, 4, 6.
Yeah.
So now you're ready to... Oh, and you've done First Contact.
Yeah.
So you did First Contact a while ago. So you've done...
That was my first Star Trek thing
8.
Ever.
Well, there you go. That was your first Star Trek. So you've done 8 as well. So now you need to go fill in the holes.
Yeah.
Generations, Insurrection, Nemesis... And you've also watched a few episodes of the
Next Generation
as well, which is a lot of fun too. So out of the Star Trek you've seen so far, what do you think your favorite Star Trek is?
I like First Contact.
You like First Contact the best?
Yeah.
Okay. I still think I have a real soft spot for Wrath of Khan. I love First Contact.
Wrath of Khan and First Contact.
Fair enough.
They're my favorites.
But I have to say that out of all the Star Trek movies, I'm going to be controversial and I'm going to say that I think the new one is my favorite.
I'm just those are the two favorites in the old
In
ones.
The old movies, right.
Yeah.
I think the new Star Trek is probably my new favorite Star Trek movie.
It's mine too.
Yeah, I think
it's
one
of the best
well
that
done.
I've seen.
Yeah, I think it's very, very well done.
Did you know that the guy who played Spock couldn't put the live long and prosper?
Yes, we did. We actually mentioned that in our news segment, actually. We brought that up right at the beginning of the show. He had to super glue his fingers together.
Yeah. and also in the old Star Trek, Captain Kirk couldn't do it.
That's true.
Now here's
an interesting point for you. There's been a bit of talk on some of the podcasts, and one podcast in particular, which is called Slash Filmcast. I was listening to them, and I thought I'd run this past you because you are a huge Star Wars fan.
Yeah!
Now, they actually posited the idea that
Star Trek and Star Wars?
No, they posited the idea that the new Star Trek movie is actually a lot like Star Wars Episode 4.
Yeah.
And they're
oh yeah, because I heard of that the guy that made the new Star Trek wasn't a real Trekkie.
Well, that's true. He was actually a bigger Star Wars fan. But no, that's not the point though. It wasn't the fact that he liked Star Wars better. It was just the idea of the story, the whole idea of the hero was a farm boy from Iowa, whereas in Star Wars, Luke came from a farm on Tatooine. Yeah. Nero was destroying planets, just like Darth Vader was destroying planets. Yeah. And they were drawing all these conclusions. It ends in, this is a spoiler zone. It ends in a ceremony where he gets a medal pinned on him. They were saying there's a lot of connection between the new Star Trek and Star Wars Episode 4. And I was listening to it going, maybe there might be something in that.
Could you believe spoiler zone?
Yeah, spoiler zone.
Could you believe Spock's planet got destroyed?
I know. I was stunned by that. And for those who haven't seen the film yet, I mean, one of the key points, and if you are listening to this, then you don't care about spoilers. If you don't want to hear about this, then stop listening now. But, you know, with the destruction of Vulcan. But we already established at when I reviewed it with Jake, how J.J. Abrams pulled that really wonderful trick where he basically allowed to reset the timeline.
Yeah, because Spock came back from the future.
That's right, because you've got Spock coming back from the future, which basically
allows
him to change.
Yeah, and he was playing the same person that...
That's right, Leonard Nimoy comes back and does his cameo, which I thought was really lovely. So I thought it was a really good film. I really enjoyed it. I thought the cast was universally very, very good. The special effects were outstanding, and the action was really, really good.
Yeah, remember when that big monster was chasing
you? Liked it? Well, see, there's another Star Wars comparison. They said Star Wars Episode 1. They said the monster's chasing him, and then gets eaten by a bigger monster.
Yeah.
So they kept drawing these comparisons, saying, you know, it's just a little bit the same. So I thought that was rather amusing that they would actually find those similarities. Now, the other film that you saw over the last 2 weeks...
Was Wolverine.
And now, you were supposed to come on and review it last week, but of course I was sick, so we didn't do a show.
I actually hope that I haven't reviewed it already.
No, I'm pretty sure you haven't, because we were supposed to come in and do it last week, but of course we didn't do a show because
Now I remember. Because you watched it the day before me, so you could do it on Friday. But then I never got to do it because you're too sick last week.
Bingo. All right, so now is your chance. What were your thoughts on Wolverine? I've already reviewed Wolverine, so...
I thought it was better than X-Men 3, but not as good as X-Men 2.
No, I would go with that. I would definitely go with that. There's been a lot of talk that it actually isn't as good as X-Men 3. I wouldn't go that far. I actually think that X-Men 3
is the worstest X-Men film ever.
And it's still got fun stuff in it, but I was just very disappointed with it.
But it's the worst X-Men film.
Yeah, it's the worst X-Men
film. I'm not saying it's the worst film ever.
Yeah, I just, you know, I look at X-Men 3 and I go, it was a missed opportunity is what I think.
Yeah, they could have waited for the guy that made the... 1 and 2.
Well, that's true. I think 20th Century Fox could have waited for Bryan Singer to come back and finish it, but instead they pushed ahead. And Bryan Singer was doing what?
Superman.
Superman Returns. That's right. He was off doing Superman Returns, and they didn't want to wait for him. So they pushed ahead and they got what they got. They got Brett Ratner. What can I tell you?
The Rush Hour guy.
That's right. So with Wolverine, was there anything in particular you liked about Wolverine?
Because I've never seen them actually tell any of his story in the movies. That's why I like it.
Well, they did a little bit in X-Men 2.
Yeah, in X-Men 2 because they showed Stryker and everything. But this really shows his past.
Yeah, well, that's
true. Except there's one weird thing about it. They say it's set now, but it should be set in the 70s.
Well, that's a very good point. And this is actually something I don't think we actually touched on this in our review, but it's something that has been going through my head over the last couple of weeks, which is if he was fighting in all those wars and the firing squad at the beginning of the film, which we played a clip for, was in the Vietnam War, and then it comes up at the end of the – it comes up in at the bridge and says 6 years later or 7 years later or whatever it is, that would actually position that film in, like, 1979, which makes it a period film. There is no period detail in that film at all. It doesn't look like the 70s at all.
The only thing that looks a tiny bit like the 70s is his coat.
Yeah, maybe his leather jacket, yeah, because of the brown stripes and stuff on it. But, you know, that's kind of shonky. If you're going to try and fit it into the same timeline, you really got to make sure that you get your timelines right. And it didn't look like the 70s at all. It's interesting because over the last couple of weeks, I've been mulling over Wolverine because I actually said similar thing to you, Nicholas, which was that I thought it was better than part three, but it still was kind of weak. And in thinking about it, and I've actually seen the film twice now.
Yeah, because you had to see it before.
Well, that's right. And the more I ponder it, especially after seeing Star Trek, which is such a good film, and you know, it shows you how film should be made.
This is a real geek year.
It is a real geek year, and we're getting geekier by the minute because we've got Transformers. And
yeah,
all sorts
Transformers.
Of, I was about to say, I'm sliding.
Also Terminator.
Well, that's true. I'm sliding back on Wolverine a little bit more and more. I think it's a flawed film, and I'd like to see it again when it comes out in DVD, and really have a look at it. Look, it's entertaining, but it's not a great film. Star Trek, on the other hand, is entertaining and is a great film. And a really, really good stuff. Now, if you had to pick the old crew of Star Trek, the Next Generation crew, or the new crew from the new movie, who do you think your favorite crew is?
I like Next Generation crew.
You like the Next Generation crew? I like the Next Generation crew. I think they're pretty good,
and,
too.
And I like Spock from the old crew.
Yeah, Spock's cool. I have to say, I think Picard's the man. My darling wife Katie is a massive Picard.
Star Trek.
She's a Picard fan.
And she's also a Star Trek fan.
Oh, she loves Star Trek, but yeah. she really loves Next Generation. She loves Picard. She thinks Picard's cool. And on that note, I think we're gonna
remember when Picard turned into a Borg.
Oh yeah, Best of Both Worlds, one and two. Great series of great two episode double parter.
Yeah.
Season three finale. Season 4 opener. Really good stuff. I've got some more episodes of Next Gen to show you. We're going to get into that.
Yeah, a lot of episodes.
Do you know,
you have the whole collection.
And do you know what we have to watch tonight? We have the season finale of Smallville.
Oh, yeah.
Simply titled Doomsday.
Doomsday.
So I'm looking forward to that. That should be a lot of fun. In the meantime, Nicholas, we're going to have to wrap this up. I know. We're going to wrap this one up for this week, though, and I'm going to say thank you very much for joining me for your analysis of Star Trek.
Good to
live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper.
And the rest of you, in the meantime, go
live
see more.
Live long and prosper, everyone.
Live long and prosper, everybody. And in the meantime, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And I think what we will do for Nicholas's on Nicholas's behalf, we are going to go out with the classic Star Trek score because he wanted it so badly. So until next week, we will see you. What am I saying? Until next week, here is Star Trek. Thank you.
We'll be right back.